We're beginning Masechta Sukkah, page Mem Dalet in Ein Yaakov. The beginning of the Masechta talks about the minimum and maximum size for a sukkah. So one of the things it talks about is the minimum height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim. And so the Gemara gets into a discussion of where we know that from. So the Gemara talks about the idea that the Aron plus the Kaporis was a total 10 tefachim tall, because the Aron, the Pasuk says, was an amma and a half tall. We learned in Yomar, Rashi made the point over there that the Aron didn't have legs, so it wasn't like there was legs plus a height of the box. Rather, you had the box sat on the floor, and it was an amma and a half tall, which according to the Meir is 9 tefachim. Later on, the Gemara deals with what about according to the Yehuda. And then the Gemara says the Kaporis was a tefach tall, so that makes 10 tefachim, and we find that the Shechina rested on top of the Kaporis, and then and Hashem spoke to Moshe from there. So in this connection, the Gemara brings Tanya Rabbi Yosi Omer, Me'olam lo yoda Shechina lamata me'asara. The Shechina never went down all the way below 10 tefachim onto the ground. This is where we get the expression that they've always used, lamata me'asara tefachim, that we should see things repoil in the world. So here the Shechina never went down. Actually, the Iyun Yaakov points out we shouldn't really say never. When Hashem first created the world, here we're coming up to Yud Shvat now, we have the Maamar Basi L'gani, which quotes the Medrash that Ikur Shechina v'tachtonim hosa. So yes, to begin with, before the Chatei Tzadas, the Shechina was actually here, v'tachtonim, literally the Matam Asarat Fachim. But ever since then, even when it says that Moshe brought it down, then the Gemara is saying over here that it still remained above 10 Tfachim. When we talk about the Renigla, then again it'll be down here on earth. Anyway, so the Shechina never came down below 10 tefachim. And Moshe and Eliyahu, when it says that they went up to Shemayim, they never actually went up all the way, or they remained within 10 tefachim, because there was, after all, there's a different reshus. There's a reshus below 10 tefachim, and there's a reshus above 10 tefachim. We know that that's the case in Hilchas Shabbos. So here also you have as far as the Shechina, and then there's the place of people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Shemayim Shemayim Hashem, Va'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam. The heavens belong to Hashem, and the heavens for this purpose is defined as anything above 10 tefachim, and the earth he gave to people, so each one remains in its own place. So now you have all over the place in the Chassidus, it talks about the idea that it says in the Medrash that there was an absolute embargo between them. You have the Moshul that the Medrash brings that there used to be a law that people from Rome are not allowed to travel to Syria and vice versa, and then the Ebishter says no, I'm canceling that rule, because the Yomim you have in the Moshul over there, the king wants to marry a woman from Syria, and he says now that Zera is bottled on the Amaschil, Shenema Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. It's quoted in innumerable places in Sichas, but here the Gemara is taking the view that even with that, even though that mechitza between Oyonim and Tachtonim was broken, there still remains something. There still remains of a limitation of above and below 10 Tfachim, which the Shechina doesn't appear on earth below 10 tefachim. There's places in Chassidus, there's a mime of the Mittal Rebbe, for example, that talks about the idea that you have, what do we mean by what 10 tefachim are we talking about? So you have the Merkava, you have the way that Yechezkel and other Nevi'im pictured Hashem, so to speak, riding this chariot carried by the Chayus and the Eifanim. So that's the Asarat tefachim that we're talking about. The Shechina never appears without that kind of thing. But Matan Torah also, you have that the Rosh Hashanah, you have the expression that every Jew saw over there what even the greatest Nevi'im didn't. So yeah. So the Gemara asks, V'lo yoda Shechina lamata v'oksi v'yerud Hashem al Har Sinai. It says that Hashem came down on Har Sinai. And the answer is, lamata ma'asar, l'may l'ma'asar tefachim, means Hashem remained above 10 tefachim. There is, by the way, you have those two Rashis in Parshas Yisroi, one that talks about that Hashem came down on Har Sinai, and one where the Rebbe explains that Hashem, so to speak, bent down the heavens and put them like a sheet on top of a bed on top of Har Sinai, and then you have a different pasuk where Rashi explains differently, and there's a whole sicha where the Rebbe talks about the difference between those two perspectives and the difference between Yud Tes and Chof. One is Perek Yud Tes pasuk Chof, the other one is Perek Chof pasuk Yud Tes. But anyway, the point is that there's still the separation. What about Voxiv Omdu Ragla by Yemohu al Harazesim? You have the Pasuk that says that the time of Mochemus Gog Magog, Hashem's feet will stand on Harazesim. And again, the answer is Lamaila Masarat Fachim. So after that, after Mochamas Gogamogog comes the Giluyim of Asid Lavoi, then you don't have that limitation anymore. But the time when the Pasuk is talking about is still before that. Okay, so that takes care of that. What about the other way around? So again, the answer is L'mayim Asor Tvachim. So the question is, what about Moshe and Elio? You're telling me they didn't actually go up on high. And again, the answer is L'matam Asor. Moshe remained within 10 Tvachim of the ground. Now, even within 10 tefachim, Maharsha refers over here to something that he says on this in Bava Metzia, where the Gemara mentions over there that when Moshe went up to Shemayim, he didn't eat. As we know, he was on Har Sinai for 3 times 40 days, and he didn't lechem le'ochel, mayim le'shasa, vice versa. The Malachim, when they came to Avram Avinu, they did eat, because lo'olam al-yishana onam minan gamakim. So fine, Moshe is not more than 10 tefachim above the ground. He's within 10 tefachim, but nevertheless, he's on a higher level, and therefore he's on a level where it's already considered to that extent the reshus of the malachim, and therefore he's not going to be eating. Yeah, vashtus means 10 tefachim from the ground. So that's what we're saying. In other words, that he was lifted up, even just a couple of tefachim above the ground is already lifted up, is already lifted up into a different madrega. You know, you have the line in Kovitz Mechtovim in the back of Tillim. You have the whole long story over there involving the time of the Tzemach Tzedek when he one year he calls together a few select chassidim, and he tells them that every morning early first thing in the morning they should be saying Gantz Tillim, and the kitzur, there was a terrible gzeira on the Jewish people, and the Alter Rebbe had told, or the Mittel Rebbe rather, had told them that this is what you need to be mevatel the gzeira. Anyway, at the end over there he says, you know, the same way as Kos Shel Bracha Ton Hagvah Tefach, you have to lift it up a tefach, the same way Tillim is Dovra Melech Kos Shel Bracha, it lifts a person up a tefach from the world. So you see that even lifting up a tefach, you're still within 10 tefachim, you're already on a different level. What? Say what again? Yeah, we're saying Vayal Moshe Ola Elevikim, but we're saying he remained within 10 tefachim. Oh, Hashem actually says that he lifted him up l'mayim and Hashemayim. Okay, I mean, the Gemara is not asking on that. Maybe we could say also he lifted him up within 10 tefachim from the ground, and that's already enough to be, you're right. I mean, l'mayim and Hashemayim, I suppose, borad on the face of it, comes from a much higher, from much higher levels of the atmosphere. I don't know, unless Taka, we do say that maybe we mean Asara Tfachim, maybe we mean the whole Gashmistika earth and its atmosphere and everything counts as the base, and then Asara Tfachim or Lamailama Asara Tfachim would be within 10 Tfachim or beyond 10 Tfachim above that. It's a good point, I don't know. L'chora not. It seems to be saying that we're talking about within 10 tefachim or above 10 tefachim from the ground. Or again, maybe taka it means from the top of the atmosphere. I don't know. Okay. What about Roksiva Yal Elio Vasora Shemaim? It says that Elio was taken up in a whirlwind Shemaim. Again, Lamata Masor. Okay, but here's another one. Back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Roksiv, the Pasuk in Iyev says, Ma'aches Pnechise, that he holds on to the surface of the throne, Paushes Olav Anonai, he spread out his cloud over him. So this is referring to, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, that this is referring to when Moshe was up in Shemayim to receive the Torah. You have the whole thing where the Malachim are arguing against him. Hashem, what are you doing giving the Torah down on earth? T'nohod Chal Shemayim. And then Hashem says to Moshe, hold on to the Kisei HaKavod and answer them. And so the Pasuk in Iyov metaphorically is describing that. V'omer Rav Tanchum, and in fact, Rav Tanchum explains, what is this word, parshez? It's an unusual word. B'chlal, the Torah Tzmima likes to point out, he says, b'derech klal shoshim in Lashon Kodesh usually have 3 letters. So when you find a word in Tanakh that has that seems to have a 4-letter or 5-letter shoresh, then the Chachamim are generally going to darshan it as a netriko, and as it's like a portmanteau of a few words mushed together. So here you're not going to have none of these letters pei, rei, shin, and zayin can possibly be a prefix or a suffix. None of these letters function as that. So therefore, the Gemara's understanding, it's a compound word. So v'omer Rav Tanchum melamed shepirush. Shakai miziv shchinosev anonay olav, Hashem spread out from some of the glory of his shchina and his cloud on Moshe. Parshes is short for peras shakai ziv. So therefore, Hashem spread out some of his glory on Moshe and made it possible for him to answer the malachim. Marsha refers over here to what he explains in Shabbos, which is Hashem was showing with that the person, after all, unlike a malach, a person is a compound of gashmius and ruchmius. The same way, though, you're a gashmiistic person. Therefore, the malachim are arguing that you and other fellow gashmiistic people like you don't deserve the Torah. I'm going to spread my cloud and my glory of my shechina on you, showing them that you have a ruchmiistic component as well. You have a component of the kisei hakavod in you, because the neshama, after all, comes from underneath the kisei hakavod, and that will give you the ability to answer them. Anyway, the point is, on the face of it, if Moshe is all the way by the kisei hakavod and holding on to it, that has to be l'mayla me'asara. And the answer is no, l'mata me'asara. It still means below 10 tefachim. Like Mar says, mekom makom ma'achas p'nei kisei, but it says he's holding on to the throne. And isn't the throne itself l'mayla me'asara tefachim? And the answer is no. D'ishkar buvi ishkar buv le'kisei ad asara means that Hashem stretched out the throne, Hashem lowered down the throne until the limit of asara tefachim, menachit bay, and now Moshe is able to hold on to it. In various places in Chassidus, it talks about what the kisei hakavod represents in terms of the olamos. If I remember correctly, it talks about that the kisei hakavod represents olam hayitzira. I may be wrong about that. I don't remember. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that so Moshe is being brought up to a higher level than olam asiya, but still nowhere near atzmus mahus, which remains strictly l'mayla ma'asara in a whole different dimension. Yeah, so Akosiv mentions over here the point that it's a different rishus, yeah. And that's he says that that's what it means. And in other words, that's what the Gemara is saying, that it means that Hashem still remains beyond all rishus, but close to it. Right. So different world. Yeah. So in other words, again, when we talk about the Olamus, Atzilus, Bria, Yitzira, Asiya, we have to remember those are not spatial worlds in the sense, you know, if you take a spaceship and you travel X number of light years, you'll reach Olam Yitzira. Of course not. You know, the Ruchniistic worlds, all of them are present within, you know, right here within our reality. We just can't perceive them unless we're attuned to them. So that's the Lamaila and Lamata Masara Tvachim that we're talking about. So the Asara Tefachim on the face of it is 10 Tefachim from the ground, or again, maybe 10 Tefachim from the top of the atmosphere. But primarily, we're talking about Ruchniistic realities over here, which, to a certain, you know, we learn about them in Chassidus. We can understand them to a certain extent intellectually, but we're not going to perceive them unless we're. Okay. So the Gemara continues. So further in this connection, the Gemara discusses how do we know that the Kaporis was a Tefach thick? Because that's what we were using to establish. If the Oren is 9 Tefachim and the Kaporis is 1, then there is your 10 Tefachim, and there we see that the Shechina never went below 10 Tefachim. There is also, by the way, a reason why to say that the 10 Tefachim is from the ground, because that's where the Oren is, sitting on the ground in the Mishkan and later on in the Bais Hamikdash.
It's from the ground up.
Yeah, that's also true. Yeah. So anyway, so Toni Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina teaches a braisa, kol ha-kelim she'osam Moshe, nosnen v'antara, midas okon and midas rochbon. With all the other kelim that it says that Hashem told Moshe to make, the Torah gives the length and the width, midas kemosan and the height, all three dimensions. Kaporas, midas okon, midas rochbon nitna, or midas kemosan loy nitna. When it comes to the kaporas, the Torah tells us the length and the width. It's the same as the Oren itself, 2.5 by 1.5 amas. It doesn't say the height. How do we figure out what the height is? Seyulaman mi pochas shebekelim. You can learn it out from the smallest of the kelim, the smallest measurement that's mentioned in connection with any of the kelim. Shenemar, it says by the Shulchan, while Sisala misgeras toifach sovid, you should make for it a frame of a tefach in size all around. It's machlokas in Menachos, whether this frame was above the tabletop and it was meant to, by like kind of to keep the lechem upon him from falling off, or was it below the tabletop and it's meant to hold the legs together, like you have often on tables, you have rails that hold one leg to the other. Whatever the case, the point is, the Pasuk mentions over there a tefach, and that's the smallest dimension that the Torah ever mentions in connection with any of the cavemen. There were things that were smaller dimensions, but it never mentions those dimensions. The smallest one that ever mentions is a tefach, so malahal and tefach, afkan tefach, therefore we can learn from that Kaporis was a tefach thick. Agav, they point out, it may be that it was actually a tefach thick along the edges and not necessarily a tefach thick, the full thickness of it, because a slab of gold that size, 2.5 by 1.5 by 1 tefach, would contain in it more than all the gold that it says they collected for the entire Mishkan that's listed in Parshas Pekudei. So mathematically, it may be that it was made kind of like an open upside down box, like an open upside down shallow box. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara asks further. So how do we know? The Gemara says that there is something smaller that was in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash, namely the tzitz. So Tanya, tzitz doma kamin tashtozav. The tzitz was like a flat golden plate. The roch of Beis Etzbois was 2 etzbois wide because it had to go on the Kohen's forehead, on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, and that's approximately the height of the forehead. Umukaf me'ozen la'ozen. It was long enough to extend from one ear to the other. The kosev ala Beis Shittin. The words Kodesh Lashem that it says in the pasuk had to be written on it. Were written in two lines. Yud kei milamayla. The Kodesh Lamed milamata. Yud K doesn't just mean, obviously, it didn't just say Yud K, it said Yud K Vav K. But that was written further up and Kodesh Lamed further down. Tosfos discusses over here, first of all, that the reason why the Gemara doesn't mention all four letters is because you have a problem of Hoigeas Hashem Bo'si Yosef. We know the same way as you're not allowed to pronounce the name Yudke Vovke as written, you're not allowed to say the letters of it individually either, which is why, for example, before Baruch Shamar, we say Yudke Bavovke in other examples when we mention that shame. So Tosfos says, as far as Yudke by itself, technically you wouldn't have that issue, because even though it is a shame of Hashem, Hoigeas Hashem Bo'si Yosef only applies to the name Yudke Vovke. Nevertheless, Tosva says people are careful with all other shamus to not pronounce them either. Anyway, the Tosfos also then discusses, what do we mean when we say that the name Yudke Vovke was above and Kodesh Lamed was below? Now, the reason behind it is, the reason because of covered of Hashem's name. It wouldn't be bekovedik to put something else before Hashem's name. Marsha points out, now we have obviously throughout the Torah, we have things before Hashem's name. In fact, you have a Mishnah in Yadayim where there was an argument, one of the arguments between the Tzedukim and the Prushim, meaning the Chachamim over there, was just that, where Tzeduki says to the Chachamim, look at this, in a get, you write at the top, you write that this get is being written in the year of Pliny the king, and at the bottom you write Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, so isn't it disrespectful to put a Goyish king above Moshe? And then Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, whoever it was, I don't remember, answers him back. You know what? In the Torah we have Vayomer Paroi mi Hashem, and yet there's no problem with that because that's the style. So the difference is over here. Marsha says the difference is that on the tzitz it only said the words Kodesh Lashem. Mela, everywhere else you have words before and after Hashem's name. Okay, that's how else are you going to write it? But here, where you have only these two words, then it's not respectful to have something written directly before Hashem's name, and therefore they had to write it in two lines. So Tosfos points out it can't be that it means literally that the name Yudke Vovke is centered above the word Kodesh Lamed, because then it wouldn't read properly. You know, you don't read from bottom to top, you read from top to bottom. So therefore, so Tosfos learns that it means there was Kodesh Lamed over here and Hashem over here, so it's on the higher line, but it's still, you can still read it like that. And there's different other opinions among Rishonim how exactly it was arranged in such a way that you'll have that the Yudke Vovke will be on top, and it can still be read in a row with the words Kodesh Lashem, or with the words Kodesh Lamed. Anyway, V'omer Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi, Anira Isib Biroimi. However, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi says, I saw that sits in Rome, the Kosovo, the Kodesh Lashem, the Shita Achas, and it actually said in it Kodesh Lashem all on one line. So he says, in other words, and you see from that's how it's supposed to be written. The Gemara tells us in Me'ilah a whole story where there was a Gzeira against Yidden, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoy and Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi traveled to Rome to be Mevatel the Gzeira, and the way that Hashem helped them was a shed came and took over the emperor's daughter, and she became crazy, and then she's calling out for them, and they came and healed her, and then the emperor was so overjoyed he says, you can go into the treasury and take whatever you want. And they found the copy of the Gzeira there and tore it up. But while they were there, they got to see various kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, and one of them, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi, says that he saw the tzitz. This would have been like 70 or 80 years after the Churban. You have, in fact, the Rambam brings in this connection. Given that we have Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yosi saying that, we have to say it must be kosher that way. And so the Rambam brings in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash that generally they would write it on two lines, but sometimes they made it on one line, and that would also be kosher. And there's a sicha where the Rebbe discusses the ins and outs of that, in particular, the why didn't the Chachamim accept Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi's afterwards? It's an eyewitness testimony that he sees the tzitz over there, because they say that's not necessarily the tzitz that the Kohen Gadol used. It may have been like an imitation that they made in order that the Goyim don't take the real one when they're sacking the Beis HaMikdash. Meanwhile, though, it would have to be that in order for the Goyim to be fooled, it would have to be that occasionally the Kohen Gadol really did wear a tzitz that had it all on one line, and therefore that justifies the Rambam writing that sometimes it was written on one line.
By the way, I just heard that they took it Israeli.
That's very interesting. Okay. Okay. Let's first deal with getting them to return all the hostages. They should help them, and then after that, you know. I hear. Okay. I know he's talking about the things from the Vatican that the Kalim of the Bismikdash. Okay. I mean they should help, but you know, if they're gonna be doing deals to get things returned, first let him arrange for to get back all the hostages safely, and then I understand, I hear. Okay, interesting. All right. Anyway, the point is the Gemara says, so you see that tzitz was only two etzbois wide, so why do we have to assume that we learn the kaporis for the thickness of the kaporis from the size of that rim around the shulchan, rather than saying that we learn from the tzitz? And the Gemara answers, because the tzitz is not really a keli, it's a tachshit, it's a different kind of thing. So then the Gemara deals with afterwards, the Gemara goes on to deal with what about according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Amos of Kalim were smaller, and therefore the Arden was only 7.5 tefachim tall. According to him, how do you learn the whole concept that a sukkah is 10 tefachim tall? But in the course of that, the Gemara also deals with that another question is that with the faces of the kruvim were one tefach in size. So the Gemara says, well, my kruv, why are these creatures that are on top of that are depicted on top of the kaporis, why are they called kruvim? Amar Rav Abahu, kiravya. The word kruv is related to the word kiravya, so the kof is a prefix, and ravya means a child. Shekem b'bavel, currently in Nukar Ravya, in Bavel, in Aramaic, a child is called ravya. So kiravya means that the kruvim were made to look like children. So therefore, and then a child's face is small, so it's only the size of a tefach, so therefore that's the size of the faces on the kruvim, the Gemara says. So Omale Abaya Elameata, or a different Girsa, Yad Yosef brings it, a papa asks Abaya, Elameata Dichtiv, what about? So you're telling me that a kruv has the face of a child, but you have in Yechezkel. Now the first time Yechezkel sees the Merkava twice, in Perek Aleph and in Perek Yod of his Sefer. The first time is the more familiar one, because we read it as the after of the first day Shavuos. He describes that the kruvim have four faces: pnei shur, pnei nesher, pnei aryeh, and pnei odah. The second time, then he sees the kruvim again in Perek Yud, and there are slight differences. One of the differences is that he sees, instead of the pnei shur, there's a pnei kruv. Rashi brings over there from a medrash that Yechezkel says a pnei shur, the face of an ox, is going to be a constant reminder of the chet ha'egel, and therefore Hashem, it's a Gemara in Chagiga actually, and therefore Hashem transformed it instead into a kruv. Now, if you're telling me that the kruvim have human faces, so then the pasuk says pnei echad pnei kruv, pnei sheni pnei adam, hainu kruv, hainu adam. If the kruvim have human faces, then the pnei kruv and the pnei adam are the same thing. So what's the difference? And the answer is api ravri viva api zutri. You have the large face of an adult and the small face of a child. So that's what the kruvim have. And from here is where we get the expression. You have arich anpin and zer anpin is based on this gemara over here. Further on in the perek, the Gemara deals with the Mishnah says sukkah yishana. When you have an old sukkah, that is as the Mishnah goes on to say, where it was made more than 30 days before sukkah, and it wasn't made l'shem sukkah. Beshamay poslan and besilam achshirin. So Beshamay says such a sukkah is possible unless you pick up and put down the schach l'shem schach, and Besilam says it's kosher. So the Gemara says, my time at Beshamay. Why does Beshamay hold that such a sukkah should be possible? And because omakra chag sukkah shivas yomim l'shem. The pasuk says a yomtiv of sukkah 7 days for Hashem, and that means, since it says Hashem means sukkah hasui l'shem chag ba'inan, it has to be that the sukkah was made strictly for the command of Hashem. So therefore, for the yomtiv. Ubes Hillel, what does Bes Hillel answer to that? They say, so if it was done within 30 days of the Yom Tov, since as the Gemara talks about in other places, within 30 days before Yom Tov is when you're supposed to be learning Hilchos HaChag, so then it can be considered that it was made L'shem Sukkah. But when it was more than 30 days before that, then Beis Shammai says that no. Or Beis Hillel, what does Beis Hillel answer to that? They say, Ahum Iboi L'chadir Rav Sheshes. We need that pasuk to teach us what Rav Sheshes says. Do'am Rav Sheshes, Mishum Rav Akiva, Minayin La'atzi Sukkah, Sha'asurim Kol Shiva. How do we know that the wood and other materials that we use to build the sukkah are also Bahana all 7 days? Meaning even if the sukkah falls down, or even if you have extra pieces that you don't need for the sukkah, and what does Lashem mean? V'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Vaseir Omer, k'shem shechal, shem shamayim, al chagiga, just that when it says chag ha-sukkos, the word chag doesn't just mean the Yom Tov, it means the korban chagiga of sukkos. So the same way as k'shem shechal, shem shamayim, al chagiga, just as Hashem's name is on the chagiga, once you've designated an animal for your korban chagiga, you can't use it for whatever purposes you want. Kach shechal, shem shamayim, al sukkah, so also the name of Hashem is on the sukkah, and it's reserved for the use of sukkahs, shenem achag asukkahs shivas yom lashem, machag lashem af sukkah lashem. Now, Tosfos points out, in fact, if it hadn't been for the word chagiga, then yes, we would have said, like this shamai, that means the sukkah has to be made l'shem chag, but since we have the word chag over there, then that makes him say that it means that the pasuk is comparing the sukkah to the chagiga, but not to say that the sukkah has to be built l'shem mitzvah sukkah. In fact, it does not. The halacha is like this hillel, as it usually is, and therefore it can be built even 30 days in advance, and you don't have to pick up the schach. However, if you do have, if it was built the shaloi l'shem sukkah, then yeah, you would have to. Then you would have to. Yeah. Okay. Further on in the perek, it's dealing in detail with the dinim of schach. The Gemara brings in that connection a from a Mishnah that says that that if you have straw that used to have grain in it, and now you have some of the straw with a little bit of the grain still stuck to it, or you have, for example, a cluster of grapes where most of the grapes have been taken off and you still have a little bit, so you have you have like this, you have a concept in halacha called yodas. Mainly the main place where the Gemara talks about this is in Chulin. You have a concept, for example, that if a food is makabel tumah, then you have a certain amount of the stem or whatever that's attached to it is also makabel tumah and transmits tumah along with it. The Gemara in Chulin learns it out from Sukkim. So now the Gemara deals with you have a stalk of grain that you took it and you threshed it. And you still have a little bit of a yad attached to the stalk of grain. That yad is not makabel tumah and doesn't transmit tumah. So usually we would say that's not makabel tumah anymore, because at that point, by doing that, you've shown you don't intend to use it as a yad anymore. You just want to get the grain out of it and throw it away. However, the Gemara points out that there are some times when even so, it will still be makabel tumah, because the Gemara says shiruyin lahofchan be'eser, because you still want to have, until you do the threshing, that's what it is, until you do the threshing, you want that yad to still be attached to it. You're going to thresh it and you're going to remove it anyway. The point is, because it makes it easier to handle it with an eser. An eser is like a pitchfork or something like that, that they use. How do you winnow grain, after all? How do you thresh and winnow grain? You throw it up into the air, that's the malacha of Zoda, and the wind, either you have a natural wind or you fan it with a fan or whatever, and the wind carries away the shells, and then you're left with a pile of clean grain. So when you have these yodis still attached to the stalk of grain, it makes it easier to pick it up with an esser, so it doesn't fall through the holes or between the tines or whatever of the pitchfork. So now, having mentioned an esser, the Gemara brings a piece of agadta about that. Why is the tefillah of tzaddikim compared to an eser, where you have the pasuk by Yetar Yitzchak LaHashem, by Yosu LaHashem? You have other examples from the Rashi, doesn't bring other examples, but we have, for example, in last week's parasha, we have a few times by Yetar LaHashem that Moshe davens to Hashem. So the Gemara is understanding. Now, in the simple sense, you would say that they're not really related. The word asira, the word vayetar and vayosu and so forth, when it comes to tefillah, is related, Rashi explains, to a word that means a lot of. Whereas over here, the esser would be the name of a farming tool, a pitchfork. But the Gemara is understanding that there is a connection between them. So what's the connection? Loi malach, it comes to teach you. Just like an esser is used to turn over the grain in the harvest in the granary from one place to another, because that's what you do with it. You take you pick up a pile of grain with it, and when you turn it over and move it someplace else. Af tefilas and shal tzaddikim, the same way you have the tefilah of tzaddikim. Apechas midosef shal hakadosh baruch hu mimidas ragzonus lemidas rachmanus. They turn over Hashem's midas from anger. Actually, in the printed Gemara, you actually have an even stronger word, not ragzonus, but achzorius. Literally means cruelty. A hard thing to say about Hashem, but anyway, it transforms that from that midas rachmanus to a midah of rachmanus. So that's what the tefillah of tzaddikim is able to accomplish. Maharsha mentions in where this Gemara is brought in Yevamos as well. He makes the point over there, you know, where the psukim that Rashi is quoting, where we see that it's compared to an esser in connection with Yitzchak and Rivka. It's not that Hashem was angry with them, let alone cruel to them, chas v'shalom, the fact that they didn't have children for 20 years. It's Hashem wanted their tefillah. But the fact is, Yitzchak himself, after all, represents midas ha-gvura, and therefore Hashem was acting towards him and to Rivka with a midah of gvura. So then the result is, though, that their tefillahs were able to transform that midah of gvura and turn it over into a gvura, into a chesed, like we're saying over here, that the pitchfork turns over the grain and turns it over from one place and from one position to the other. Okay, Hayoshin Perek Sheni. So the second parak continues dealing with dinim of the sukkah. The Mishnah says, "Ha'oisa sukkosa b'roish ha'golo b'roish ha'sfina." If a person makes a sukkah on top of a wagon or on top of a boat, Kshera, then it's kosher, and the Mishnah goes on to say you could even use it on Yom Tov. This that you can make a sukkah on top of a wagon is how we have the whole concept of sukkah mobiles, after all. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Mani masnisin Reb Akiva. Now, who would our Mishnah be like when it says that you can make a sukkah on a boat would be according to Reb Akiva? Detanya, ha'oisa sukkosi b'reisha spina, Rav Gamliel poiso b'Reb Akiva machshir. Rav Gamliel actually holds that a sukkah on a boat, on the deck of a boat, would be possible. And Maisa b'Rav Gamliel for Rav Akiva show you boin b'sfina. It happened once that Rav Gamliel and Rav Akiva were traveling on a boat, and it was Sukkot time. Now this may be later on in the Masechta. We have the story where they were with two other chachamim, and they only had one lulav and esrog between them that belonged to Rav Gamliel, and he was giving each one matana manas lahachsu, and they're giving it to the next one. So maybe this is the same story, and just the Gemara is not mentioning the other chachamim because it's not relevant to the story. Or maybe there was a different time when only Rav Gamliel and Rav Akiva are on a boat. Anyway, Omer Rav Akiva v'asa sukkah b'reish ha'sfina. So Rav Akiva went and made a sukkah on top of the boat. L'macha noshva ruach v'akarata. Next day, a wind came and blew it down. Omer Rav Gamliel, Akiva, heichen sukkascha. So Rav Gamliel says to him, Akiva, where's your sukkah? It sounds like a very funny, almost sarcastic way of saying that. But
below the belt.
Yeah, a little bit below the belt, kind of. Habboina brings over here that there's a metaphor behind it, that the sukkah, after all, represents a diras are, and we should realize that we're only temporarily in this world. So therefore, Sir Gamliel is saying that, look, the Gemara goes on to explain what's the underlying machloikas is like this. Winds on sea are generally stronger than winds on land. What you would have, a ruach mitsuya on land is generally weaker than one at sea. So now, if you can build a sukkah on a boat strong enough to stand in a ruach mitsuya of the sea, sure, Rav Gamliel won't have a problem with that. His problem is Rav Akiva's sukkah was strong enough for a ruach mitsuya on land, but not enough for a ruach mitsuya on sea. So and that's why it blew over. So now Rav Gamliel is telling him over here that look, if you have it's not even a diras are. In other words, like you should realize the whole a person's whole life in this world is sometimes a joke. So that's why he's almost like joking to Rav Akiva, heichan sukkascha. Like, you know, a person can take a lesson from that, how insubstantial this world and the diras are that a person lives in it is. Anyway, but again, the Gemara explains that Rav Akiva would say that it's good enough, even if it's only strong enough to withstand a land ruach mitzuya, even though it's not strong enough to withstand the sea ruach mitzuya. As long as it's standing, then you can still be yotze in it. When it blows, Mitsuya, Mitsuya means regular. So you have a typical, you have a normal wind on land. You have a normal wind on land, which would be a couple of miles per hour. And then at sea, you have much stronger ones because there's no mountains to block it. The boat itself is moving, and that creates a draft, etc. So therefore, if you're gonna build a sukkah on a ship, it has to be a lot stronger than it would be on land. Rabbi Akiva holds it doesn't matter. You can build it the same strength as you would on land, as long as it stands good. If it blows over, okay, it blows over. You can't help it. Whereas Rambam Gamliel would hold that no, it's possible to begin with unless you build it strong enough to actually withstand the normal sea wind. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola, Zayin Shvat. The Rambam tells us that Melech HaMashiach is going to be from Beis David and from Zerah Shloimeh. So what's the point of that? Why does he have to be descended from David and from Shloimeh? So based David, because David is the founder of the whole kingship, as the Rambam earlier says in the Halachas, that once David was anointed, then he was zoche in the crown of kingship for himself and his descendants for all time. As far as what does it mean that Mashiach is Mizera Shloimeh, but Pnimi Yisein Yonim is like this. What was the situation like in Shloimeh's times? It was a me'ein of the Gula Mitzvah Shloimeh. In his time, there was complete peace, which is why he's called Shloimeh, And as there's going to be when Mashiach comes. And the reason is because Shloimeh had the ultimate of Chochmah, Vayechka Mikola Adam. So that way, so he was Mevatel. So all the Chochmahs of all the Goyim were completely bottled relative to Chochmah's Shloimeh, relative to Shloimeh's Chochmah. Therefore, he didn't even need a war to overpower them. They themselves realized how much of a nothing they are relative to Shloimeh. So this is a Me'ein of the complete Shalom that will be La'asid Lavoi, and that is relevant to the kingship. And that's why the Rambam makes a point of saying that Mashiach has to be descended from Shloimeh. We were talking about halachas of kiddush, okay. So you're we started talking about last time that you are allowed to eat something before musaf. You're allowed to make kiddush and then eat something before musaf. But that would be, you can eat no more than a kibetza of, you have to make kiddush, of course, and then you can eat no more than a kibetza of bread. As far as fruit, you could eat even a lot of. You have to first make kiddush and drink either maloy lugmav plus another revius of wine. For that purpose, we'll consider the revius to be kiddush makam soda, or you drink a revius and you eat a kazayis of chameshes mine dagon, and that counts as makam soda, and then afterwards you can eat your fruit. Okay, another din as far as the sodas of Shabbos. You have to eat three meals on Shabbos. In each soda, you're supposed to eat bread. Even shalosh sodas, you should eat bread. And therefore, you'd have to eat a kibetza because you're washing and making a bracha. So better, a person shouldn't fill himself up by shachris so he can fulfill that. If he can't eat bread, then he should at least eat mezonos or something else. And if not, then at least he should eat things like bus of the dogim, which at least go along with bread. Or at least, if nothing else, he should eat cooked fruit. So lemaisa on minag is we're not particularly nizer in that. Although it says in Hayom Yom that on minag is we don't make a point to eat bread because it's Hayom Loi. However, we do have to eat something as a yehi chelki ma'uch l'sholosh sodas. Lemaisa, I don't know that you see that. I don't know that you see most of Anash are so careful with that either. Yotze with divrei Torah as is brought in the Zohar that you can do that in a pinch.
Why
cooked food versus regular? So he says over here that Abdu'l-Ebba doesn't mention the point of cooked food. Apparently the idea is because cooked is at least a little more of a chosh of a meal than just plain food. Anyway, the actual time of Shalosh Shodos would be any time from Mincha Gdolah and on for 6.5 hours in the day.